There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that.
This is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, too bad.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. Hour number two on a Monday. It's Midday Mobile, of course, online at fmtalk1065.com. Check us out, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and podcast. Like somebody was asking for the podcast of the last hour, like you'll be asking for this hour. It's part of 54 hours a week of live local programming waiting for you through our website, or you can subscribe at iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Spotify, any of those places. They've got our podcast. Good to see back in studio, Mobile County District Attorney Ashley Rich. Thanks for coming back.
Thanks for having me.
It's National Crime Victims Rights Awareness Week. Is that?
That's pretty good. It's National Crime Victims Rights Week.
Rights Week.
We celebrate that nationally, and we here in Mobile celebrate it locally as well.
Obviously, this is something that I think in our conversations over the years is big. Not just the prosecution that you and your team does, but also you're always been on this show and everywhere else an advocate for the victims of crime.
Absolutely, because that's why we exist at the DA's office, is to represent victims and make sure that the victim's voice is being heard in the justice system.
But I mean, I'm going to kind of expand on this. People might not know, because beyond just doing your job as a prosecutor and putting the defendant finding a guilty, making a case that gets a guilty verdict and putting that person in jail, your outreach, I don't know, to the victims, I've watched this over the years. That's obviously, it's a personal thing beyond just the work in a courtroom.
You know, the relationships that we form with victims when their cases come to the district attorney's office is unbelievable, and it's a lifelong relationship. I have victims of cases that I represented 25 years ago. I've been doing this 25 years that I still know and still personally keep in touch with, because we formed such a bond when they were, thrust into the justice system, never knew they were going to be a crime victim, and then all of a sudden they're in the justice system, and mm-hmm. they've had to, you know, be assigned a prosecutor to help with their case and to prosecute their case and to put the bad guy who committed the crime against them away. And those relationships are just lifelong relationships that we form.
When you get somebody who's coming into the system like that, it's not just, you know, one person, it's their family.
Absolutely.
You know, and so it's not just an individual. I'm sure it's multiples of people affected every time a crime like this happens.
Not only that, you know, that certainly in a murder case, the victim's family is, you know, it touches all aspects of the victim's family. But just in a simple breaking and entering, which I know you've had your own share of that, it's a community and a neighborhood that's affected. Mm-hmm. When somebody comes into the sanctity of your neighborhood and starts breaking into your cars, they're not doing it just to one individual. They're doing it to, you know, 5, 10, 15, 20 victims, and they're terrorizing the whole neighborhood. And so not only do we see the individual victim, but we have, you know, community areas that are victims of especially in high crime areas. And so, you know, we just want to make sure that we're helping the individual victim themselves, or if they're deceased, their families, but certainly the victims themselves and the community and the neighborhoods that this crime is occurring in.
Let's talk about the event going on this week here, but it's a national event.
It's a national week,
okay.
And then individual jurisdictions just decide if during that week they would commemorate National Crime Victims Rights Week with a vigil. And we have done that traditionally at least 30 years here at the DA's office. And it's so very important for victims to have an event that they can come to and memorialize their loved one if they're a victim of a homicide or victims of robbery, just to come and be with other people who have find themselves themselves in the justice system and find themselves going through the court process. It's just a tremendous asset when you have other people that are having the same set of circumstances or issues like
speak
you.
Speak the same language as
absolutely.
Each other.
You can pat each other on the back and know that you're going through the same thing at the same time and that you have other people in this community that are rallying around you and trying to help you through the process of being in the justice system.
There's a lot of people in that justice system. I'm looking at stats here. How many people victim of violent crimes? It was, I think, over a million, 1.2 million people were victim of violent crime, excluding simple assault, in 2019.
Absolutely. And here locally.
1.2 million?
Here locally, thousands of individuals were a victim of crime just in the last year. Tens of thousands, actually.
Yeah, that's it. I want to get into that, too, because those suspects and the backlog of defendants here get into that. But what happens this week here? You talk about the vigil. When is that? When do people
The vigil is this Thursday, April 22nd at Cooper Riverside Park from 6:30 to 7:30. And not only are we doing the vigil where loved ones can come and memorialize their loved one who's been a victim of a crime, but we're doing a resource fair for victims of crime. So you're a victim of a breaking, entering, or a robbery of, or a burglary of your home. Then you can come, and we have lots of community organizations who have partnered with us to set up booths to provide services to crime victims, whether it's the victim needs counseling or, we have issues with substance abuse that are ongoing with different cases. And all of the resources, Penelope House will be there, Drug Education Council, Lifeline's Family Counseling Center, all of these nonprofit agencies will be there to be able to explain to victims the resources that they have available to crime victims.
Yeah, the groups you've named, people have all been on this radio station and talked about them, and you talk about them, but there may still be people out there that don't know that anything's available to them.
Well, Sean, when you become a victim of a crime, that crime has changed your life forever in an instant. Mm-hmm. I know that some people say that sounds so dramatic, Ashley, but it's true. Mm-hmm. When you become a victim of a crime, your life is forever changed in some way because you've had a criminal defendant who's committed a crime against you personally, or your house or your car. And so a lot of people need counseling, and Lifeline's Family Counseling Center is a wonderful place where we can offer counseling services to victims of crime to help them get through the initial shock of being a crime victim, but then also through everything that they're dealing with when going through the justice system. You know, the fact that it's going to take 3 years now because of COVID to prosecute their crime versus, whereas before COVID it took 18 months. You know, a lot of people have a really hard time with that, they're going to be experiencing the justice system for a long period of time. And so we offer counseling services, residential services, drug counseling and drug abuse issues. We offer those services as well. All these are available at the vigil.
You just rolled out 3 years. Before people might see justice, right? See that court date. You've been keeping us up to date through this, through the months. Where do y'all sit for number of cases in backlog, and what is the situation right now with the prosecution?
We have over 5,000 felonies that are currently pending right now that need a trial date, and they need the defendant gets, of course, their day in court, but the crime victim is trying to get their case concluded through a trial, through a jury trial. Mm-hmm. And we have thousands and thousands and thousands of cases that are just sitting there waiting for a trial date.
These not misdemeanor, you said felony.
Felony is a year or more in jail, but most of these are serious felony offenses where the punishment could be up to 99 years or life.
Those people, you're saying right now, it looks like 3 years before
tonight, if your car's broken into and our office contacts you within the first 7 days and lets you know that we're there and available to help you go through the justice system, we're having to counsel our victims of crime that it's going to be at least 2 to 3 years before their case will be heard before a jury.
The other side of that has been, and it's interesting, and your office has done such great work. Yeah, personal experience with y'all as well. But in the past, people would plead guilty.
Right.
Right? They'll plead guilty, they take whatever it is. That's not happening so much either, is it?
It's not happening right now because we only have two judges that are on a criminal trial week that are able to get a jury per week. So we only can try two felony cases a week right now.
So what was the backlog again? How many thousands?
Over 5,000.
And you can try two a week?
Two a week right now. And we are encouraging the judges to allow us to try more than two a week, and some have allowed us to try a second trial on a Wednesday, one on Monday and one on Wednesday. But right now, the maximum we can try on a week is two, and there are only two judges that are on a criminal trial docket right now, and they're only certain weeks. And then at the in May, the summer break will be coming, that's set by the judges, and then we won't go back to jury trials until the fall. I'm begging that in the fall we go back to the regular trial schedule that we had before COVID. So that all of our judges are on, and that we are able to try multiple trials in a week, and we'll have multiple settings on every day of the week.
Okay, everything has been in flux through COVID, so why not, if the situation's better, we look at the what the state's done with not having the mask mandate, all these things. I know there's the summer break, but sometimes, I mean, if you have a situation like this, you don't do summer break. Am I talking out of my ear here?
No, absolutely. We would love to continue.
Say this year we're not doing
every
summer break
week, but that's not up to us. The presiding judge sets that schedule.
I mean, I guess in a normal year you're getting things done. But it hadn't been, and there's this backlog. I mean, if we're looking at it somewhere else, and I got a backlog of commercials we need produced around here at FM Talk. You know, and we normally take a break for whatever day this is. Well, we can't do it this year. We got to work.
You're absolutely right, Sean, but unfortunately the district attorney's office, doesn't set the schedule. The presiding judge
That's who would make the decision not to have the summer break.
Correct.
I tell you what, we're going to go to the break. I want to come back and talk about this too, because I know as my discussion with you, people are thinking right now, well, we get this backlog, and it's every day, it seems like, at least weekly, we're hearing very serious cases. Homicides, attempted homicides, gunplay going on. What is so?
3-year-olds getting raised by bullets.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Babies being shot.
Mm-hmm.
And you're telling me right now, even with an arrest and somebody going to the system, that person is far out as 3 years from seeing that family that's affected, as far as 3 years away from seeing a day in court.
That's correct.
3 years. Once again, I want to say this.
Not a day in court. They're going to have multiple days in court, but the trial. First,
yes, the trial. Mm-hmm. Exactly. So the trial. But let's, once again, the backlog is what right now?
Thousands. Over 5,000 cases.
Felony cases. All right. Coming right back. More with Mobile County District Attorney Ashley Rich right here on Midday Mobile.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 in Midday Mobile. Our guest in studio, Mobile County District Attorney Ashley Rich. It is National Victims. Okay, there we go. And the vigil is going to be on Thursday.
Cooper Riverside Park from 6:30 to 7:30.
All right, so be able to go down there. Encouraging anybody who fits that description.
Anybody who's a victim of a crime can attend the vigil, and be available to look at all of the booths that are available for the resources that are there for crime victims.
And maybe this is one of those occasions too. If you know somebody who fits that definition, it's worth letting them know about it. If you're listening, but you can let them know that's going on Thursday. We talk about the what's going, and I know it's We're up from last year. We have had years in the past where there have been, gun violence and homicides at this level, but it's up from last year. It seems to me, and it seems to a lot of citizens here in Mobile, it is a every couple of days story of somebody being shot, mm-hmm. and multiple somebody's being shot in our city.
Mm-hmm. And, Sean, what's so important is, everybody's saying, what can we do? What can we do? What can we do?
Correct.
From the district attorney's perspective, one thing that I have been arguing, and your listeners have heard me say every time I've come on the show, is if you're out on bond, okay, and you commit a new offense, you should not be given a second bond, period. You should sit in jail until your case comes to trial, regardless if it's 2 years or 3 years from now. If you're out on bond, and if you're the criminal, you get out on bond. Bond is a privilege. Okay, not a right. It's a privilege. If you are allowed to post bond, if a judge gives you a bond on your original offense and you're out on bond and you commit a new crime or offense, then it should be automatic that you're going to sit in jail until your trial. What's happened is they get another bond right now, and it sends a message to all the criminals, hey, it doesn't matter if I go right back out and go back to the same neighborhood and break into the same cars, I'm going to get a bond again. So, hey, I'm just going to continue my criminal activity because the chances of me being locked up are slim to none. So let me just keep going with my breaking and entering, you know, keep breaking and entering cars, okay? So we've got to send a message that if you're out on bond, you commit a new offense, you're in jail. Sam has never turned away a prisoner that we have asked him to house. Sam Cochran, our sheriff, excuse me, I should address him in a more professional manner. But he's never turned anybody away. And that's the purpose of why we got together and we have now passed an IAS law through the legislature. But the citizens are going to have to vote. That's a constitutional amendment to allow for the provision that judges can hold defendants in jail with no bond.
And it's
on
can.
Cases other than capital murder cases.
Right. So it's can, because I remember my conversations with Chip Brown, with Representative, he said it doesn't make the judge, but it
gives him the option
to do this.
Right now, I argue all the time that if the defendant's a flight risk or a danger to the community, they can do it right now. But what typically happens is judges say, well, you know, we understand they might be a danger to the community, but they're entitled to a bond. And this law would stop that argument.
It gives them that option. Mm-hmm. It gives the judge the option to say, if I'm putting in Sullivanese here,
sure,
but that there's a chance with this person's already shown that they're going to go out and commit another crime.
Mm-hmm.
And some of these cases have been shooting
and
people,
so,
and the story of the murder of Anaya. You know,
right.
I mean, these are things you can show how
right.
this is.
So not, it's not just the DA saying this person is a danger to the community, don't let them out, judge. Now Anaya's law is solidification that the judge can hold them and hold them with no bond, okay? We've always argued the judge can do that now, but the judges don't agree. They think they have to give the criminal defendant a bond because there's nothing written in the code book or the law book that says they can hold somebody with no bond other than a capital murder.
So if we vote for this on this amendment, the CA, it would then change Alabama statute to where the judge can
hold a criminal defendant in jail.
It puts it in the law where they can say,
other than a capital murder defendant. So a robber, somebody who commits breaking and entering, they can be held in jail until their trial. Okay? So this is a good thing. And we need to make sure the community understands. You know, a lot of times when you go to the ballots, you don't know about what the constitutional amendments are.
Mm-hmm.
And so from now until it goes for a vote, we're going to try and start educating the community that the Anaya's Law is a fabulous amendment to the Constitution where it will give judges the what they consider the authority they need to hold criminal defendants in jail with no bond other than capital murder defendants.
I think the best example, and obviously with the law being named for, is what happened to Anaya Blanchard. I mean, you had this dirtbag who had almost done this before.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? It's not like it was just breaking and entering. This right. person had kidnapped, had him in the vehicle, was going to, you know, it just didn't get it finished, and then goes back out
on bond,
and then does what they almost did the first time.
And they, right, that's exactly right. And they, I argue, and we argued at the time, they should have never been given a bond. Okay, on the second, on the first case,
it was
sure,
a kidnapping,
they get an opportunity for one bond. But when they commit a second crime while they're out on bond, they should have been put back into custody immediately. But again, they were given a second bond. He was given a second bond.
And then was out when he committed the murder.
Yep.
Kidnapping and murder. All right. As a community here, because people, you said, what can we do? And this is a what we can do.
Absolutely.
Because people are always going, and you're often saying, you can only do, you know, what can we do? This is
a positive step to make sure that judges are able to hold criminal defendants that commit other crimes other than capital murder in jail with no bond. And that is huge for this community. And that's exactly what we need, because I can stand up and preach it all day long, and the police chief can stand up and preach it all day long that judges need to hold these defendants in jail with no bond. But they're not doing it. And so this would force their hand and
then
make it happen.
Well, you can answer or not here, but as a citizen, then I know if that judge did issue that, but they made the choice. They had the option not to issue that.
Correct.
Third would be like the third bond.
Correct. Because right now we're arguing, okay, if you're out on bond and you commit a new offense, well, that proves right there you're a danger to the community. So don't let them out again to do it a third time.
Until they get a trial.
And they are letting them back out right now, and they're letting them get a second bond and sometimes a third bond. Okay?
And that
is what is sending a horrible message to defendants, that they can just get right back out of jail and commit their crimes, continue on their crime sprees, basically.
Once again, Thursday, the vigil, Cooper Riverside Park.
Yes, and we welcome all members of the community to attend. And we're trying to get the community to show these crime victims that the community is behind them and rallying behind them.
And we are. And great work, you and the staff down there doing what y'all are doing. And we'll get updates here in another month or so. As always, I appreciate your time.
Thank you for having me.
Mobile County District Attorney Ashley Rich in studio. Coming back, AL1's Congressman Jerry Carl joins us right here on Midday Mobile.
You're listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Right, welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. Glad to have you along. A big thank you to Mobile County District Attorney Ashley Rich. National Victims' Rights Week this week. The vigil is going to be on Thursday evening at Cooper Riverside Park. More details through our Facebook page. You can check it out there as well. All right. Say hello to our Congressman, AL1's Congressman Jerry Carl, joining me now. Thanks for your time.
Thank you, sir. Great to be with you, Sean.
Good to check in with you. Now, you are you in Washington now?
I just landed in Washington, and I've just got in my office. So, yes, I'm in D.C.
You ready for another round of this?
Another week of grueling punishing, getting shoved around, but we're here.
There's so much on my list to talk to you about. First of all, what's made news, of course, a lot of places, and right here at FM Talk, is this call from Maxine Waters, right? So Representative Maxine Waters telling the Black Lives Matter protesters to get confrontational, depend on what goes on today in Minnesota. So your reaction to that?
Well, I saw that when it broke. I think it was Saturday or yesterday. Whenever it broke, I saw it when it first come out. That's typical of her. She's a very rude person. And if you remember, she did something similar when she talked about getting in people's face in the restaurants and basically, you know, running them out of restaurants. Republicans is what she was targeting. So, you know, what she did the other night and what she said, I think, did spur the National Guard, a couple of National Guardsmen that were shot at. I think that was part of it. And that's what we're going to try to make a case on this week. So you've seen McCarthy already step up. You've seen Representative Green suggest a bill. How far it goes, we have no idea. Obviously, they're majority here, so we're scrambling trying to get three more votes for, you know, virtually everything we do. So, but it's her. She's just a very rude person. She's that way in real life, and that's just her personality. She's been here so long. I mean, she's like Nancy Pelosi. They're like, you know, some of the old granite marble in here. They don't feel like they have to move for anybody, for anything.
Well, Congressman, being rude is one thing. And, I can lament the change in discourse in Washington, but being rude is kind of commonplace now. But the difference is, I would say, when that rudeness is, I mean, if we're going to judge what everybody says and whether it's a call to arms or it makes somebody do X, Y, or Z, which seems to be a big talking point of the left, then why wouldn't that same thing be true with Congressman Waters? Waters.
The frustrating thing is most everything up here is double standards. It doesn't matter, you know. It's just double standards. It's that way across the board. Virtually everything we do, everything that has been done, you can go back and find where the Democrats that are pushing against it now did it 15 years ago. I mean, look at Biden. That when he came out, you know, against the court packing, talking about how foolish it was to even to consider it, and you know, he gave a long speech on the Senate floor about how silly it was. But, you know, now he's in favor of it. So that double standard up here is very common, very common.
Let's talk. You mentioned court packing. That's a good pivot point here into this. You know, they said, what was it last week? We're not packing, we're unpacking. I put that
and
on
I
my.
I thought that was the craziest thing I've ever heard.
I saved the audio. It's going to go in a show open at some point in the future because it was ridiculous. We're talking about, let's get down to it. We're talking about court packing. We're talking about adding more members of the Supreme Court. They've got to realize the pendulum swings, though, right? So if we're going to go to this new, which I don't like it either way, world, then next time Republicans are controlled, they're going to add more members to the Supreme Court. And what do? We have a Supreme Court that numbers 435 like the House, or what?
Well, you know, what their thoughts are is to get control of the Supreme Court, get enough liberals on the Supreme Court. So when a lot of this stuff gets pushed up in the next 2 to 3 years, it can actually go their way. So, I mean, with H.R. 1, with all these bills we see, you know, stacking up and coming up, they're trying to change this country in a dramatic way. And it's no big hidden fact. I mean, they've told us that. They told us that during the presidential race. You know, they're going to change it, and they're doing it. So this court packing is just another step in that direction. I don't think it's going to work. I think there's enough common sense in the Senate that we can get one vote, if not two. And I think it'll just the Senate is much more deliberate in the things that they do versus the Congress. Congress reacts, you know, to a lot of things where the Senate seems to really think through it and try to be a little more deliberate. So I don't think it's going to make it through the Senate. It'll make it through the House. I mean, they could do anything they want to in the House right now, because they have that six margin control, depending on what day it is, but six is the best day. So it just shows, you know, how they're a bunch of hypocrites. I mean, it just they tell you one thing and do something different the next day. It'll come back and change.
Okay, but that's. The hypocrisy is one thing, and I'll have to argue that Washington is full of hypocrisy. You know, not to go back too far, but in this case, it seems like it's just strategically a bad idea. You know, if you're trying to convince a Democrat in the Senate or someone to block this, you should say, look no further than to what will happen, because the pendulum will swing again, and at some point, the Republicans will be in control. Do you want them to come in and I mean, It seems like it's not a win.
If they have their way, there'll not be another Republican elected.
I think there's enough cooler minds that probably, I know some that's a desire, but they got to realize, even if their grand plan is put into place, I think you go several more cycles, even with their grand plan in place, before that happens. And then the Republicans, why wouldn't the Republicans, why wouldn't y'all? I mean, if that's going to be the situation, I would like to hope cooler heads would prevail, but, you know, you go in there and they've added four, then you add four. Or you had 24, you know, why stop at four?
Well, why couldn't we take it back? You know, why couldn't we knock it back down to
seven? Do you get a lifetime appointment? What do you do with those folks?
I don't know. I was trying to remember where in history, I heard them talking about it last night, that there were 10 on there. They changed it back to seven. I don't know how they did that.
When one passes or something like that. I don't know that either, but that's what I would worry about. You couldn't redistrict the Supreme Court, right? If you got lifetime appointments, what are you going to do?
I don't know, but so, you know, so much of the House up here is just drama, and they throw these bills up there. They make a big fuss over them, knowing they're not going to pass, but it gets their name out there. It makes them. Makes their constituents feel like they're working for them here, and you know, I think the Democrats are a lot smarter than I'm talking about. The voters are a lot smarter than what the representatives are doing right now. I think it's going to just crush them in 2022. I think a lot of these Democrats just won't even bother to vote. They're just getting disheartened because, you know, it's a socialistic movement up here. I mean, everything. It's just a And they're in a hurry to get it done. They know there's a very small window for them. And the best we can do is hold it up. You know, we'll extend these votes out as long as we can and pass it on to the Senate, and the Senate drags as long as they can. But with the president ordering that study for 6 months, mm-hmm. I don't think he has a whole lot of ambition himself to see that push through.
So he is not, you're saying that he is not leading that, he is maybe trying to slow that down?
Well, if it's 6 months out, why do they need 6 months to study it?
I have no idea. I'm not inside the brain of the Democrats.
That's just what I'm saying. I think there's just, that tells me, in my little mind, that he's wanting to slow it down for some reason.
Okay.
I just don't think his heart's in it.
I just wonder if it's not even that they know they don't maybe have the support to do this, that they come out and say, you know, when Nadler's out there saying, I don't know that they have that support, which is, I mean, similar to a discussion you and I have had, and I want to get into, on Second Amendment issues, the fact that here goes President Biden moving this on a executive order level tells me that the votes aren't there. Even with the Democrats that are in power, the votes aren't there. For
exactly.
Taking away.
That's what that tells you. If not, I mean, he would have clear sailing with it, pushing it through the House and through the Senate, and of course, making those changes. But, you know, the Second Amendment, it is, and you and I have talked about this. I mean, there's several Democrats up here that I know that are very, very high on the Second Amendment. They believe in it. They're part of it. They're enthusiasts. They're shooters. They're hunters. So to get, you know, we're so narrow up here in the House. To get that push through is going to be tough. So, but you know, and I'm waiting for them to maybe throw something up in front of us, because you know everybody wants to blame the gun. It's AK-47. It's automatic weapon. They've got all these labels. Well, my response is, okay, if you're going to blame the gun, let's blame Hollywood, and let's blame the gaming industry. Because people watch movies and get numb to the fact of shooting people, and then they go out and do something like this. So was it the gun? Was it the movie? Was it the video game? And I was talking to my staff, which I just got out of a quick staff meeting, and they said, well, I don't understand. I said, well, you got to remember who shot President Reagan. It was a guy that watched the movie Taxi.
Taxi Driver,
And that's the reason he shot Reagan, because he was supposed to win Jodie Foster's heart. So again, who do you blame? You can't blame a gun. A gun's not going to, sitting still by itself is going to do nothing.
Right, but it's, well, I would argue that it's the individual that,
yeah,
you know, beyond all those, the individual.
We have some serious mental health issues in this country. We don't deal with them properly. We don't finance them properly. We just it's so easy just to blame the gun. That's not, you know, the gun's never killed anybody. Somebody's pulling the trigger.
But wouldn't it even be because it's impossible to do, you know, have this argument where there's no gun in the mix. That's the problem. They try to make it seem like it's a simple yes or no argument when it's not, and then they come after things like pistol braces or bump stocks or all these things that are not even getting to the real issue, because these are just not the core issue. These are just extra pieces of talking points here that don't affect whether people are killing each other or not.
Yeah, the real issue is drugs in the street. The real issue is what they're shooting one another over. Where the drugs coming from? Coming across an open border that nobody wants to try to stop the traffic flow, and the drug flow coming across the border. It all plays in together. I mean, it's all one big whirlwind, and no one wants to address that. They don't want to try to fix it. They just want to cherry pick the parts of it that they feel like, you know, that they have got their interests, or people getting them to stop, or you know, like Second Amendment, you know, or the AR-15s. I don't understand why somebody can compare an AR-15 to a 1911, and that's 45 caliber handgun. Somebody knows how to use that gun. It is much more lethal than that AR-15. I mean, it and you change a clip in that much quicker. So I don't, you know, and they don't. And I tell my staff all the time, they will never ever outlaw guns, but they'll keep chipping away at our rights until one day we don't own guns anymore.
Well,
and there's a difference, and you know, they'll just keep chipping away, bite at a time. So we just push back as much as we can.
Well, or you can't get your hands on them. And that is, and I know we just have a minute left here, but, you know, I've told this audience several times, my worry, the biggest thing here that worries me is the attempted repeal of the PLCAA, which would make gun manufacturers make them available for liability. When somebody legally buys a gun and goes and uses it in a crime, then all of a sudden, you know, the gun manufacturer is a named, you know, defendant in a lawsuit.
Okay, and that's what I'm getting at. Make the movie industry the same way. Make the game industry the same way. If you're going to blame, if you're going to hold one accountable for stimulating a mentally challenged person, make them all that way.
There you
go. Now, I know I'm not making myself very clear here, but
no, I follow it.
It's very simple. It's not the gun. It's not the movie. It's not the video game. It is the person that made that choice.
Yep.
That's where the real problem's at. So let's address the person. Let's address the drugs on the street.
Well, I mean, you're in Washington, right? That's where, I mean, we do things locally, but that's where, if we're going to address these things, and y'all have got the, a lot of work to do. And being all of y'all, that's not just Republicans, that's Democrats, that's every independents, everybody up there.
This is a problem that affects all of us.
Yes.
All of us.
Agreed. Agreed. All right, Congressman, we appreciate your time. I know you've got to go. We'll get you back on really, really soon.
Thank you, Sean.
All right, there he is. AL1's Congressman Jerry Carl, joining us from Washington, and we're coming right back. We'll grab some texts and calls at 343-0106.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5. Call Sean now at 343-0106.
Right, welcome back. This segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK. It's my buddy Trey. He's been doing this for going on 13 years now. Mobile and Baldwin counties. You got junk, you want it gone, you need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. You know, it could be, too. I was thinking about this the other day. When you have multiple issues, like if maybe you got junk at the house, but also at the office, or maybe a house you're getting ready to sell, it's kind of stacking up on you. Like, you could maybe attack one of the items, you know, one of the places, but maybe not all three at the same time. Maybe I'm projecting my real life onto it, but it's fine. Listen, you've got junk. You don't know what you're going to do, how you can get rid of it. You call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. It could be the big trampoline in the backyard. It could be a guest room that's just piled full of boxes. A storage unit you pay on every month. You don't even know what's in there. You don't need it. Save money. Get rid of the stuff and call 1-800-GOT-JUNK. And you'll make an appointment. They'll find a day that works for you and a window of time that works for you. That's when they show up. They quote your price. You say yes. They get to work and get it done right then. There's a reason you see their vehicles all over Mobile and Baldwin counties, because they're doing work for your neighbors and your friends and your family. So do it for yourself. Call 1-800-GOT-JUNK or go online to their website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. All right. Show notes for tomorrow, too, quickly. In the noon hour tomorrow. So Sean Strickler is going to join me to talk about rural broadband. And this, we've heard the rural broadband discussion, and Jeff's done a lot on his show, and Dan and Dalton have as well, and I have, with the kind of the politics of it. Funding maybe coming out of the lottery and gaming money. But how's it going to work? Like, who's going to lay the fiber? Are we going to do it that way? Are we going to do it by satellite? Who gets first part? Is Washington County get priority over Lauderdale County? Does Escambia County get priority over Greene County? I mean, how does that all work? So we're going to dig into that part of it, because that's kind of the stuff that really interests me, the folks that do the work and get stuff done. And we're going to talk about that tomorrow. And that's in the noon hour. Plus, Dr. Scott Chavers will join us in the 1 o'clock hour. So many good texts here. And I'm going to pick one out. I mean, really some great texts. But Sly sends this. He said, I keep hearing over and over again about mental health and how that's the cause of all these shootings, and I agree it is. I don't hear anyone suggesting anything to help solve the problem. So I'm with you. People have offered things, but I guess not at the top of the, you know, not the elected officials. Red flag laws, to some degree, they've discussed to address it, Sly. So, I mean, former President Trump had talked about that. President Biden has mentioned that as well. Maybe there's at least a discussion to be had there. I think there's a lot of issues with that and how it's implemented, but that may be part of it. That's to keep that person from getting a gun. How do we address the root cause? It is a quality question, Sly, and hopefully we can hear from people that can address that. Is there a solution, and what would that look like?
Hey.
All right, we'll pick that up on a show in the future. I'm out of here. Paul Feinbaum on the way next. Y'all have a great one. Remember, online, fmtalk1065.com, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter.